most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So the prosecution has wrapped up their case in the Manafort trial. Interesting. Going to see how the defense comes out tomorrow swinging. What will their defense be? Everyone's lying but my guy. And will Manafort take the trial? Take the stand? Will he have the ostrich jacket on? Will he have the satin pants? I can guarantee that's not going to happen. Doubt he takes the stand. Anyway, we're here to share some thoughts on what's going on with the trial and everything else around the nation. Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
So does he take the stand?
No.
Never?
No.
Not at all? Not going to happen?
No. I highly doubt it.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
No, I don't think
but at this point, what's he got to lose? I mean, everything that we hear coming out of there, I don't think the defense really did a good job of discrediting anyone, do you?
No, I mean, I think that the jurors with Gates, I think Gates has been discredited a bit now. The other witnesses aren't. What was the accountant and then a couple other witnesses? There was five. If they really focused on Gates because, look, you know, Gates stole some stuff and he was in the Trump campaign. So if anybody could be discredited a bit, but I don't think he was completely eliminated, don't get me wrong. But yeah. The other witnesses couldn't be discredited. One of the more amusing things is when somebody asked Gates, well, did they threaten you with 200 years? And he said, oh, no, it was 100.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
First 90 are the toughest, Rick.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just getting past those first 90.
The last 10, that's a breeze, right?
Yeah, but you know, look, they had 28 witnesses, and all we talk about are the ones, the accountants.
They got the money. They knew where the money went.
And that's the thing. You know, someone knows where the bodies are buried. And those folks, they sure turned quickly. I think he's going to be found guilty. He should spend probably a good portion of the rest of his life behind bars. And then he gets to do it again in not too distant future, which, hey, fun for him.
Mm-hmm.
Probably couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
I don't think he's going to make it, right? The trial, I think he gets found guilty.
Yeah. So do you think at the end of the second guilty, if that comes around, do you think eventually he flips and goes, hey, you know, I'd like to see the light of day at some point?
No, because they can't give him light of day, and I think his only option is to get a pardon.
Oh, okay. So we're gonna go that route. So do you think the whole comparison with Alphonse Capone and Manafort, do you think that was code for something?
Well, they're making a point that some people are accepting this, and here's what it is. If this trial ends and there was nothing that was a big bombshell that there was collusion with the Russians and it didn't, you know, if it didn't come out in this trial, then they'll be able to spin the fact of the Capone thing, spin the fact that, look, they nailed him on something that had nothing to do with Russian collusion.
Right.
So therefore, you know, the president's clear. That's what they'll be out there.
Right, but isn't that what the second trial is supposed to bring? I mean, this one was really just about, hey, we caught you laundering a whole ton of money. This is what this is about.
Yeah, and then again, if they do try to cut a deal, then anything he says can be discredited. And the reason I say that's important, this is never going to be decided with an indictment of the president. Mueller will not indict the president. The president will not sit down with Mueller. And it's going to come to, chicken in the middle of the road, you know. And so it's all going to be in the court of public opinion, most likely.
Yeah, and the more we're divided we are, the more that just, I don't know that anyone listens to any of the reason or fact. I think at this point most people are in their camps.
Right. I think so.
And that's kind of scary to me. I mean, you look at this weekend, you had these Unite the Right idiots out, you know, marching around, you know, with their neo-Nazi flags and all that nonsense. And you go, how much crazier can it get? You know, I pine for the boring days. give me some boring days back. I'd like to have a day without having to worry about if there's a Nazi in the streets.
You know, there again, there was the corporate media, as I'll call it, you know, The corporate media invested all this money. They thought there'd be a repeat of Charlottesville, you know. So they gave massive attention. The counter protesters showed there was a good thing there, but gave massive attention to 24 people because they invested all their crews and time there,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And
I watched
something happened.
Did you see the CNN woman out there begging someone from the Unite the Right people to talk to her? And they're just standing there hiding behind their flags with their face hidden. No, we don't want to talk to you. And she's like, come on, talk to me, please. It was really,
right.
It was really quite hysterical.
Oh, yeah, and they got the clock ticking on the money. So that's about what they did.
But you're right. You know, it's you have 24 people that got all that airtime.
Mm-hmm.
I keep coming back to that scene in The Blues Brothers. You saw The Blues Brothers, right?
Oh, yes.
Where, you know, he goes, I hate Illinois Nazis, and he drives them off the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually okay with that. I shouldn't be, but I am. Let's move on. Evidently, an FBI agent was fired today, Mr. Text Fingers. I guess he was recommended only to be demoted and suspended for a bit, but they actually fired him, right?
Right. And people, of course, are saying he had the right to the opinion, but they were going to fire him because, you know, he talked related to Trump. In a normal case, this never would have all been brought out. No, never would have.
Right.
The high profile nature of this, you know, threw it all out there. Because today a friend of mine said, well, what happens if down the road Trump leaves and then a Democratic president comes in and they find out that during the Trump campaign, an FBI agent did something similar? And I said, it won't come out. You know, this came out because of a high profile case. Is the only reason this was even looked at.
So you're saying this stuff has always happened. It was just dealt with internally,
absolutely.
And it was dealt with swiftly and quietly and didn't make the front page of the newspaper.
Sure.
Of course. I mean it's just basic human
nature.
And
it's all internal.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in very different times now, though.
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly.
It's crazy. Anyway, so I can never say his name. Stroke, I guess. Strosk.
Strock, or
something like
I
that.
Get it right.
But he's out of a job now. So there's
right.
That. Let's move on. I guess North and South Korea are going to sit down with a meeting with an intermediary sometime in September. That going to happen?
Yes, and you know I don't think this is a bad thing. There
nope.
Again, the national media has tried to say, well, you know, this is going so slow, and he's building missiles. The point is, the countries have not had communication of any sorts, really, for 70-some years, just sporadically, including with us, North Korea. And so now it's beginning. It's not like Iran, where we have now cut off communication with Iran, obviously the steps, you know, we took to undo the nuclear deal. This is a deal in a process. So I think it's got to be given time, and at least they're sitting down. This is the third time the two presidents have met. From North and South Korea, and you know, at least they're talking. And if there are some differences, they can work them out versus what we are now doing with Iran.
Yeah, there's part of me that goes, you know, the Chinese are manipulating this whole thing, and they're the ones going, you know, you go sit this down and say, look, we need access to your cheap labor. We need lots of local cheap labor, and so we can, you know, get our production done and keep down the rising wages and all of this stuff. Thinking clearly, you know, just on the labor front. That's my view anyway.
Oh, the Chinese go, they're very smart. I mean, they're manipulative. They go from multiple sources. When they wanted to go into Tibet, they moved 3 million Chinese in Tibet. They banned the learning of the Tibetan language. They just committed cultural genocide over there, and they got labor out of it.
No, I mean, that's to me, it's just that simple. And I know nothing is ever really simple. I think it's pretty much, I think to me, the writing's on the wall for that. Let's move along. Big elections coming up here in, 84 days? Not too long from today. You say that the Democrats are running not just on the repeal of the ACA, what the Republicans wanted to do, but actually have some other ideas. What do you mean?
Well, ironically, you know, what started out as an anchor around the Democratic necks, which was, you know, the ACA, also known as Obamacare, which the Republicans went after that, as we know, tooth and nail. And then the Republicans said, you give us control of the government, we will repeal it, we will repeal it. Well, they didn't repeal it, but they actually have done through executive orders with the president some changes, which has obviously weakened it, and a lot of people will be leaving the exchange for cheaper programs, but if you have pre-existing conditions, you're not going to get those cheaper programs. So those plans. Now, the Democratic side has now, rightfully so, raised this issue that, hey, you know, you guys said you're going to repeal it. So the base is a little bit weak with their candidates, Republican base, because they're saying you didn't do it. You had your chance. You didn't do it. Now it's here. But the Democratic side is making this a boutique issue, which is really smart, by the way. They're going in, for example, let's take the Attorney General in West Virginia. They're going after him because he filed a lawsuit on the ACA. So did the Attorney General in Missouri. Both of them are running for the Senate. So they're going after them and saying, hey, you filed the lawsuit. Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, he didn't buy into the Medicaid expansion. Well, Republican Governor Kasich did. It's working in Ohio, right? So they're going after not just the Republicans have done nothing. They're going after Rick Scott. You did this. So they're picking out candidates and how they're tied. One candidate for the Senate was an insurance commissioner, and he approved a rate hike in the premiums. So they really latched on. Now, don't get me wrong. There's other issues they better get on fire, you know, with very quick. But they've come to realize that there were other issues beyond two or three that they were out there promoting. And this is one. They're getting some traction on it. I don't know if it's too late, but they have certainly been able to get this out front. We'll see what they do with it from now to November.
Now, and the Republicans ran not just on repeal, but on repeal and replace. You know, they supposedly had the utopian plan. And they couldn't even repeal it, and they've had no suggestions on what to replace it with. And I think you're right at the very beginning. I think everyone, especially some of my Republican friends, were literally shocked that there was nothing there, that it wasn't even the same bad ideas that they'd had in the past, like health savings accounts and more stuff like that. They didn't even have that ready to go.
Well, look, they did nothing. They did not balance the nation's budget.
Oh, far from it. They went the other direction.
Right. They went the other direction. Right. Exactly. And they provided and the tax relief they provided is not going to get them votes. They're starting to realize that they didn't repeal and replace. They didn't stop, as they said, you know, the illegals like they said they would do because they control both chambers. Now, Mitch McConnell makes the argument that Harry Reid, the Democratic leader, used to make. Well, just give me some more votes. People don't, the Senate is controlled by the Republicans. Don't tell me, give me some more votes, you control the chamber. That's the way they looked when Harry Reid tried to say that. And they have failed on all these things. So what does that translate to? The base may not be so excited to run to the polls for them.
Well, let's hope so. I'm hoping they stay home.
If the Democratic side is smart.
I'm hoping they stay home. I'm hoping the Republicans stay home because, look, there's got to be some pendulum swing back somewhere towards sanity. Because to me, this, you know, healthcare is the most important issue. Ask any family. They want to make sure that if their kids, you know, go ride their bike down the street and they break both legs, that they're going to get the care that they need and they're not going to have to worry about being bankrupt. That's just simple common sense. And I think everybody wants a solution to this. Prices are getting out of hand. You hear these horrible stories all the time of families struggling. And, you know, the Republicans have done nothing from the time they took power other than make, as you point out, make things worse. And the people who are getting these micro plans, because, hey, we're making those mini plans great again. Once they get sick and realize it doesn't cover anything anymore, they're going to be bankrupt and we're going to be right back where we started from.
Well, I mean, not that I count because no one has any sympathy for me and I don't ask them to. But right now I have a prescription pending and one tube is $350. And I don't have health care. I have zero health care. And because the premiums escalated to the point I had to dump it and take my shot. So, you know, I mean, it's just me. Yes, my kids are adults and things, so I'm not asking for sympathy. But there are people all out there, you know, like me and other people, and people with families far worse would have it far worse than I do. But it's out there. I mean, it's spread across the society. It doesn't say, oh, you're a Republican, I'll make sure you have health care. The Democrat doesn't. The Republicans have to realize there's tons of Republicans out there in the same boat.
Yeah. And the sad reality is that, unfortunately, you're in that situation. And nobody should be. I mean, we're the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest point. The least we can do is make sure that if you have something that ails you, you get to see a doctor. I mean, if you get in trouble, you get to see a lawyer. I mean, it just seems that simple to me.
Yes, I agree.
It's just crazy. Let's move on. Opioid addiction. I've been saying for a while when it was just, you know, inner city minorities, you know, shooting heroin. Because like when I was a kid, we found a guy. I think I was like 8 or 9 years old. We found a guy dead on the side of the neighbor's house with a needle in his arm. I believed it was heroin, so I was told. Nobody cared about him in the big, heavy army green coat. Nobody cared about him. But now this addiction has hit, you know, lily white suburbs, and we've got Oxy, and now it's a crisis. Now we've got a crisis when just poor people were dying in poor neighborhoods in the ghetto. Nobody cared. But now, crisis, right?
Well, yeah. Well, the article came out today, and it's interesting. Not that there's a correlation with the Republican to the opioid, but there is an interesting fact, that is that more of the districts that are headed by Republicans have some of the highest opioid abuse rates and opioid problems in America. It's all over the country, but rural, South, and also Appalachia, it's out of control problems, and there's a lot of Republicans there. So, yes, it's not just an inner city problem. It's all over the place, and so, people have to realize in the positions of power, they've got to try to do something with this catastrophic situation. So it's not just, yes, the inner city problem.
So is it pain and suffering? Is it a lack of opportunity? You know, have they identified, you know, your average opioid addict? I mean, you know, most of the people who I've known throughout the years who have had these addictions, it started off, again, most of the people that I know personally, so it's a personal story. Most of the people I've known, they got hurt at work. And they got hooked on, Vicodin and Percocet, and then eventually got to Oxy. And then they had to go, look for street stuff because the prescriptions were cut off. Do we know what drives people to this? Do we know what it is that hooks them?
It's a wide variety. It's not just a poverty index. You've actually raised a good point of what's happened. And, you know, for the last 10 years, I've sponsored people in addiction recovery, and I still do it today on an almost daily basis as a volunteer. And with the cases I know, with the opioid addiction, there were accidents, injuries, overprescriptions. People got hooked on them. Then they went, when they couldn't get them anymore, and they went into a higher street price for them. And then a lot of the people went to a cheaper product, which was heroin. But, of course, it is death and is, you know, massive addiction, instant, almost. So that's sort of the history of it. Yes, it's been used with painkillers and, you know, problems of that nature, injuries at work. So it's not just, you know, the poverty deal in an inner city. It's all over the place for a wide variety of reasons.
Yeah, it's something's got to be done. And, you know, I tell people, throughout all the years, I've had a couple of surgeries, and I had some work injuries throughout the years. And, you know, doctors were going, here, you know, if you feel uncomfortable, you know, take this Vicodin or this Percocet or, you know, this, you know, the they give you the super ibuprofen, like, you know, 800 milligrams. It's just like taking a couple extra. And I never took any of this stuff because I'm always fearful of, you know, once you take it once, that just changes everything. And I'm just kind of crazy about it. But I feel sorry for people. I really do struggle with this.
I have a friend in recovery. He went to the doctor today, and the doctor did not ask him anything, was prescribing a narcotic. And he said, wait a minute, I'm in recovery. I have to have an alternative. They were just going to give it to him.
Yeah.
I mean, these days, you've got to at least inquire.
Yeah. Is there any before I let you go, is there any alternative to the addictive painkillers? I mean, I have some friends who say, well, we should legalize pot because pot is can alleviate some pain. And I don't know. I've never smoked it, so I don't know. Is there a non-addictive pain medicine? Is there a treatment? Because, look, I think we're a society today that we don't want to feel anything. So is there anything non-addictive?
There's different levels of what they could prescribe. And here's the problem. Like OxyContin, they were prescribing at such high levels. It wasn't a controlled situation. They were high levels of pills. And then people would take two because two was better than one, you know. And that's a problem.
That is a problem.
Sure.
When you don't bother to follow the basic rules on the bottle. Because, hey, we can't read either, so there's that. Bob, I appreciate the time. Great stuff,
man. Thank you, Rick. Okay. Thank you.
As always, our good friend Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.